Hey guys, it is Andrew and JJ here with Caught Offside. We're starting a little bit differently on today's podcast because unfortunately the news that we're starting with is terrible, quite frankly. Emiliano Sala and his plane have gone missing somewhere over the English Channel, and JJ, right now it just seems that the news is bleak, I think, at best, sadly.
Yeah, there's been various reports that, they haven't been able to. They will resume the search for the plane, but at this level of time that has elapsed, they're concerned that it is not good news at all.
The timeline of all this is just, I mean, this is tragic under any circumstances, but just like to think of, probably how excited he was at this point in his life, making a move to the Premier League that could potentially, who knows, set him on his way. Emiliano Sala, for those who aren't really aware of his history, his background, he's 28 years old. And I think he was looked upon by some analysts, some fellow teammates even, as sort of a late bloomer in terms of his footballing career. But he had really, started to kind of get more exposure from, I think, October to December in Ligue 1. He had scored 8 goals during that window, and clearly he was on the radar of Cardiff City, who just laid out the most money that they've ever laid out for any signing, £15 million to bring in Sala.
And we have the video of him walking around the Cardiff Stadium and his excitement. And, of course, in this day and age, L'Équipe have got a hold of the, we're presuming, WhatsApp messages that he sent to his friends in Argentina as he was on the plane, before the plane went missing. And his excitement and talking about how tomorrow he would train with his new team. And it's just terrible.
Yeah, it really is. He was reportedly one of just 2 on board the light aircraft. Now, I guess the plane is thought to have disappeared off of the radar somewhere around Guernsey. And it's their police that appear to have, I guess, taken charge of this search and rescue. They've said that they found no trace of the aircraft or those on board. That is, I mean, this story is changing rapidly. We're recording at around 8 o'clock Eastern time on Tuesday night. They tweeted this, that if they did land on the water, the chances of survival are at this stage unfortunately slim, which is just a really grim message for to have been sent out by the Guernsey police.
Yeah, 8 hours ago they said, Guernsey police said, a number of floating objects have been seen in water. We have been unable to confirm whether any are from missing aircraft. We have found no signs of those on board.
This from the BBC. They write, John Fitzgerald, chief officer of the Channel Islands Air Search, said the probability of finding anyone alive from the missing aircraft was, quote, reducing very rapidly. I think with the sea temperatures and the sea conditions, the chances of finding anybody alive are reducing all the time, he said. The sea temperatures are very, very cold and just sap the core temperature of anybody in the water very, very quickly. It's, man, it's difficult to think about. And to even read, I'm sure the Cardiff City community is mourning this, as of course is the Argentinian community, and of course the Nantes community, the club that he played for. A kind of a spontaneous vigil broke out earlier today, and here's some of the sounds from that. You can hear the fans of the club there. They've gathered and they're chanting his name.
And it's funny because if you see the footage, which ITV had, and if you go to their Twitter, you can see that video. It's so strange because you don't know what to do. You're waiting on news. You're pretty sure the news is going to be horrific, and fans do what comes natural to them, and they just chant his name. But there's a couple of fans there they have tears streaming down their face as they chant Emiliano Sala's name. It's just incredibly tragic and awful. And, you just think about his family right now.
Yeah. One more note on this. I saw this written about Emiliano Sala. This is from Eric Bilderman's piece at the BBC. He said, on the pitch, he is confrontational. Off it, he has led a quiet life. He loves detective novels and would never go to an away game without taking a book. He plays guitar too, but took that up quite late and usually prefers to leave it at home. A common morning sight in Nantes was Sala seated at a table outside a cafe with his Labrador Naha curled up at his feet. Destiny is cruel. Very sad, 28 years old. Obviously, everybody is hoping and praying for the best, but like we just read from you, to you from the Guernsey police and from the chief officer of the Channel Islands air search, the outlook is not promising. But we will, of course, continue to monitor this and, like I said, hope and pray for the best. Emiliano Sala, everyone is thinking of you. We'll be back right after this with more Caught Offside.
Caught Offside with Andrew Gunling and J.J. Devaney.
Oh, yes. Caught Offside from the Upper West Side of Manhattan. Andrew Gunling and J.J. Devaney. What's up, brother?
How are you, man?
Doing well. Doing well. We've got a big show coming up for you here today. We're going to get into yet another injury for Tottenham. It is really, really starting to pile up for them now. It's almost become comical. Like, it's almost become one of those situations for me when I saw the tweet today from Spurs about the diagnosis. It was just like, you kind of just laugh, like, at just how this is all unfolding now and just, like, the dark humor in it. So we will talk about some of that. Also, JJ, people seem to respond positively to our In the Club segment that we did, and that was for Wolves.
Don't say it like that.
Well, but typically, like, look, let's be honest with one another. The bulk of time on this podcast is typically spent talking about the Big Six and maybe Everton.
By the way, you nixed In the Club about Leeds United in disparaging terms for one of the biggest clubs in the world.
Why would you ever bring our off-mic discussions about this podcast?
Because people say don't air your dirty laundry in public, but sometimes dirty laundry makes the best podcast.
Makes the best what?
Yeah, and Maurizio Sarri's dirty laundry was also aired and will be aired on this podcast.
Yeah, we are going to catch up with Dan Dormer, one of the hosts of the London is Blue podcast. Because like we've always said, we like having writers on the show. We like having reporters on the show, members of the media. But, you know, this, of course, is a podcast, and we support other podcasts, the whole podcast community. So we like hearing from people who are kind of like us, who don't necessarily purport to be journalists or analysts. We're kind of just fans that have a mic, and we're very fortunate for that. So we kind of like giving a voice to some other clubs' podcasts. Now, the one thing I wanted to say that I didn't say before the Wolves one, and I'll say this now, you know, we're having people on from these other podcasts. I can't tell you that I've gone back and listened to everything they've said. It's not necessarily an endorsement of all of their views and all that.
But No.
Because you just never know what kind of things get talked about on some of these team-specific podcasts.
We're washing our hands of this. We are merely doing our segment, and they do their thing, and we are not responsible for any of that content.
Right. So
we're barely responsible for our own content.
Having said that, I do believe that Dan Dormer is a great voice on Chelsea and all things happening with that club. So we're going to talk with him in our In the Club segment a little bit later on in the podcast, because they find themselves as a club right now in a really, really weird spot. A couple big things in the news that we want to talk about. Tim Howard, an American legend, an Evertonian legend, has decided that this upcoming year will be the final year of his career, so we'll have to talk about that. So, lots and lots to get to. We will have another podcast on Thursday of this week, because obviously the League Cup second legs are taking place Wednesday and Thursday. There's obviously no drama whatsoever to the Manchester City Burton Albion second leg, which is 9-0. But Tottenham-Chelsea, not the case. Lots of drama headed into the second leg. So on Thursday, after that match has gone final, and we know what the final will be of the League Cup, we'll have a special podcast out for you. But we start now with what we were talking about before, and that is Tottenham.
Before we start with Tottenham, can I cut across you right there?
It appears you already have.
Can I just say that I got a weird, not weird, it's not that weird, but I guess a strange LinkedIn request today.
Oh.
And it was from Thomas Granemark, who is the throwing coach at Liverpool Football Club.
I feel like that's a name that we've talked about before.
Yeah.
When did that come up?
I think it was when two BN sports analysts decided to deride the appointment.
I'll tell you what, I'm taking that up. I'm now officially a throw-in coach. I'm sorry. A throw-in coach. Right, here's the ball. I'm giving you a lesson. You watching? You pick the ball up with both hands. You take it behind your head like that.
Yep.
And you throw in, right, keeping both foot on,
okay,
the ground.
Okay. So
I'll tell you what I'm doing. I'm officially a throw-in coach, and I'm also going to some clubs later this month to teach them how to kick off. I am. I think that's important.
Yeah. So, Thomas, welcome to my...
A couple of, like, hyenas.
Yeah. Unbelievable. And that was my red card. They hadn't done the stats on the possession. They hadn't done the stats on the... By the way, the amount of throw-ins versus the amount of kickoffs, they never did that ratio, but whatever.
Iceland, like, beat England in the Euros because of their, like, their...
Stoke under Pulis. Survive forever. Anyway. Thomas Granemark, welcome.
Your LinkedIn, I'm sure, is an amazing follow. It's probably a thrill a minute.
Move on, Andrew. Move on.
What are you doing on LinkedIn? How much fun is that?
Well, me and Thomas talk about throw-in techniques.
Oh, okay. Well, that does sound like fun. JJ, the weekend in the EPL, we want to talk a little bit about Spurs stealing 3 points at the death from Fulham, thanks to the last touch, basically. Harry Winks heading it in on a beautiful...
What a ball.
Yeah. From George Kevin Nkudu.
He's stepping up. You know what they say about injured teams in the NFL? Next man up.
Yeah.
Well...
No, honestly.
Yep. And for Harry Winks to be the guy on the end of it, I'll tell you, he's having a nice little time in the centre of that Spurs midfield and is attracting quite a lot of attention. It was a stunning finish. It really was, to a game where, I mean, it was a hammer blow for Fulham. Just to look at Fulham for 1 second,
mm-hmm,
you've got to feel, Ranieri was just devastated. How he ghosted in and nobody saw him, and between two defenders and nodded at home.
Now, on the NBC broadcast, they were saying that the keeper's got to come for that.
I thought
that was a little bit unfair. Can't the ball just be perfect?
But keepers don't want to do that anymore because of the movement on the ball these days, because players can whip that ball so quickly. But, yeah, back in the day, Andrew, the goalkeeper would come out and punch and take everybody, and he never did.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I don't know. Sometimes I feel like we search a little too hard sometimes to find someone to blame.
I mean, it's a perfect ball,
but
the keeper's, look how close it's to the goal. That's supposed to be his area that he dominates, and he doesn't do anything.
Look, it's interesting to see who will step up in these moments for Spurs because they need people to do it. Winks did. I thought Danny Rose was fantastic for them in this game. I'll tell you who didn't. I thought Fernando Llorente had just a nightmare of a time.
He has the yips now.
The own goal, and you could just see, like, he couldn't recover from it.
Whatever about the own goal, the header from about 6 yards, that he's got to, a top player at a team like Spurs has got to nod that home. Whether you're a bench player or a starting player, and it hits his shoulder, it hits his head first, his face onto his shoulder.
But then, what about the one in, like, the 86th minute that could have won it?
Yeah, no, it's over for him there. He cannot...
But it can't be.
Well, it can't be, no.
It can't be, and we'll talk about that.
It's over for Vincent Janssen, by the looks of things.
Well, oh my God. I honestly forgot he was still a member of the team. It's an easy thing to do right now. One thing for Fulham, before we do talk about the injury crisis at Spurs right now. Look, I think Mitrovic is a good player for Fulham.
Mm.
But man, like, is it too harsh of me to say that I lost a little bit of respect for him with how things played out late in this game? And I'll explain why. So you're Fulham, and you are now entering a stretch of the season where literally every point matters.
Yeah.
Like, it's going to be that close for them to survive relegation. So you've battled with Davinson Sanchez throughout, and it was, I thought it was a fun battle to watch as a fan. Like, it was physical both ways. Both guys were getting their shots in. It seemed all good.
Yeah.
And then Mitrovic chooses a moment late in the game to just straight up tackle. He grabs Sanchez kind of around the neck almost and just takes him to the ground. Okay, fine. Like, he's had enough. Yellow cards both ways. So be it. Right now, I still don't know why Sanchez got one, but whatever. It happens. Like, double technicals in the NBA. So then Like, you would think at that point the referee is on high alert. Like, okay, there is something happening between these two. It's been going on all game. I just gave them yellow cards each. So what does Mitrovic do, what, maybe 4 or 5 minutes later? Sanchez clears a ball out of play. He kicks it out of bounds. And Mitrovic, for no reason, goes out of his way and shoves Sanchez from behind and then goes and runs to get the ball. And Spurs players are kind of yelling to the ref, what is that? Mm. Sanchez, to his credit, wasn't calling really for a red. He just kind of went on with it. But, like, nothing wound up happening. But I'm saying, when I'm watching that as a fan, if I'm a Fulham fan, I'm thinking, how selfish of a player are you that you are now allowing yourself to completely melt down because of this guy, and you're possibly going to get red carded and thrown out of a game that it looks like we're headed, Fulham, if you're a Fulham fan, we're headed to a point here in a game against Spurs where we probably never thought we had any business getting a point. We could do this now. But this guy is just like, he's so wrapped up in a personal battle with Davinson Sanchez, this unnecessary push minutes after he was yellow carded, and a referee is on high alert watching that matchup. What is he thinking?
Yeah.
It just drives me nuts when I see players do that.
But I've noticed even in his time at Newcastle, he can cut an isolated figure as a centre forward, and he does get into those battles, and he does get frustrated. I don't think it's so much the battle with Davinson Sanchez rather than the frustration of what was going on around him in a game that Fulham could have won that game, probably should have won that game.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, Ryan Babel was actually fantastic, I thought, in the first half. It was one of those things where when Ranieri decided to take him off in the second, I was kind of like, oh, thank God.
Yeah, I think the NBC commentators afterwards said that if you were to take some grains of hope out of this game for Fulham, that the triumvirate of Babel, Mitrovic and Schürrle might be something to take from it. But I'll tell you, it's getting late fast for them.
Yeah. So for Spurs, Dele Alli scores the goal to tie it early in the first half, and then a little bit early in the second half, and then a little bit later in half number two, as he's going for a ball kind of along the sidelines, he sort of falls into the end boards, and he stayed down. At first you thought, oh, maybe he hit the end board awkwardly.
No, he grabs his leg straight away.
But then you see on the replay immediately he grabs the back of his leg, hamstring, and you just think, like, are you serious right now?
Yeah.
Like another hugely important player at this specific position is going to go down for Tottenham. And it turns out that it's about as bad as it could have been. And he'll be out until early March, is what they're saying.
It looks significant, the fact that if you watch the way he goes over and the way his leg kind of, not buckles, but goes underneath him, that it was a pretty significant hamstring tear.
Well, they refer to it as a strain.
Well,
now, I don't know the difference between a tear and a strain.
Well, actually, I shouldn't say a tear. A tear is much more serious. Yeah. Then if it's a strain, it's probably a high hamstring strain. Point being, he's out for some significant time. And the concern is, well, I was joking about Troy Parrott last week, 17-year-old Troy Parrott. Is he going to end up being now a permanent member of the squad? The answer is yes, most likely.
Well, we'll see.
Well, hang on. They've got to go into the market then. With the few days that are left, try and do some kind of loan business if they don't have the money.
Well, I'm reading today, and look, you know, anybody who's listened to this podcast knows we really, really don't care for getting into transfer rumors.
Because everyone else does them.
And because I'd say 98% of them are largely nonsense that never come to any sort of fruition. But I think in this case with Spurs, you have to take everything seriously. I mean, we had seen Callum Wilson's name linked. Today I'm reading Marko Arnautovic. If this move to China doesn't end up happening,
but I've heard he's committed
favorite
to West Ham. No.
Right,
there's
so who
no
the hell
way
knows?
West Ham are selling in January to Spurs. The only way, actually I say there's no way. The only way that happens is if it's the mega money that the Chinese were talking about, because,
well, it won't be. So
Brady, Gold, and Sullivan are all about taking the money and cashing in. And
Tottenham are never offering China money to West Ham for Marko Arnautovic.
It's not happening.
Okay, so there you go. Spurs right now are without the following attack-minded players: Dele, Kane, Son, who almost came back. Their round in the Asian Cup, South Korea's round of 16 match went to extra time, where South Korea ended up winning 2-1. Sissoko, who for the sake of this argument I'll consider somewhat of an attack-minded player. Lucas Moura was out this past weekend, but they're saying now he should be back this week, possibly for the Thursday match against Chelsea in the League Cup. So what do you do? Like, this is now the dilemma for Spurs, is they can essentially be held hostage by whomever they're negotiating with because of the depth of this problem at this specific position. You know the way Tottenham conduct business. I don't see them throwing good money after bad here. Like, I don't think that they're just going to overreact to a temporary problem and bring in a player. Like, okay, fine, bring in Arnautovic. And then what happens when everyone's healthy again? He's not a first-team player, not in my opinion, not for that team. So now you've got a malcontent sitting on your bench? Like, is that what you want to do because you were so desperate to pick up points during a, like a 4 week window?
That's why you would,
I don't know.
That's why you would worry about what Spurs are actually going to do if indeed they do anything.
I don't think they're going, honestly, I'm not even saying this as a joke, like self-deprecating fan. I don't think they're going to do anything. I truly feel that way.
This is going to be one of Poch's greatest tests in terms of his coaching, because now he has just got to deal with what he's got, and he's got to keep them a coherent, challenging top four team despite these catastrophic injuries.
And by the way, I do want to say one thing in Tottenham, and I guess more specifically Daniel Levy's defense. For people who are looking at their current situation and saying, well, this is what happens when you go an entire summer without buying a single player. No. This is not like a Daniel Levy problem. This is a circumstance problem. Like Tottenham right now.
Yeah, hang on, no.
Well, hear me out for a sec, JJ. Spurs are without Kane, Son, Lucas, and Dele Alli all attacking up front. You know, if City were without Aguero, Jesus, Sané, and Sterling, guess what? They'd be in trouble too.
Correct. What I would say is that you can't get backup in is the Daniel Levy issue because they've just spent the guts of $1 billion on a stadium.
But I'm talking about their inactivity in the transfer window. I'm saying that like I don't look at their inactivity over the summer and say that this is a symptom of that. No, like this is a symptom of bad luck of a lot of players at one position getting hurt.
It's akin to Liverpool losing two of the front three or something like that.
These are four key guys at one spot.
I don't disagree with you.
Here's the games that Ali and Kane will both potentially miss. Second leg against Chelsea this Thursday in the League Cup. Champions League first leg versus Borussia Dortmund. An EPL match at Chelsea. An EPL North London derby against Arsenal. The League Cup final, should Tottenham get past Chelsea, and possibly, or maybe more likely, probably the second leg against Borussia Dortmund as well. There's other matches in there, too, that I didn't mention, but those are the key ones, and those are some absolutely massive fixtures that they have in this window. It's going to be hard for them. There's no way around it.
I think it's going to be interesting for the neutral to watch Spurs. It really is. It's going to be fascinating. The names you're going to see out there, the formations that are going to be played, the players that are going to be asked to play out of position. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah, certainly will. Over the weekend, we were treated to a couple great 4-3 thrillers. Mm. We'll start with Leicester, who lost to Wolves in really devastating fashion. And once again, I feel like we talk about this at least once a year, JJ, where Claude Puel's name appears on the hot list, managerial hot list. I believe the bookmakers now have him as the odds-on favorite to be the next manager sacked from his current job. What do you think about that?
There's, even when they're winning, take for example the game on New Year's Day against Everton, where they won 1-0 and neither team looked great. But Leicester definitely looked the more potent, and you think that's a really good result. But even during that game, Vardy is coming over to the sideline to ask Puel, "Well, what are the tactics here? What are we doing? What are we?" There was a general sense that the players haven't been behind him, even when results were going well. And there's a certain sense that the Leicester fans think Leicester can play better football and still win. And it's again this area we find with Claude Puel where you think he's actually doing a good job, just like at Southampton, mm-hmm. but it's not convincing players or it's not convincing fans, and ultimately he does what most Premier League managers do who've lost 5 games in 8, they get sacked.
Yeah.
It's really that simple. There's something about him at Leicester that's not a fit now. I think if the players weren't behind him, but yet the fans were really, really behind him, the board have given him this kind of, what do we usually call it, the dreaded vote of confidence. He's got
right. He's going to have, until barring something unforeseen, like a really catastrophic drop-off, I think he's got till the end of the season.
I think at board level, you look at what they're doing, you're like, okay, they're solidly where we'd expect them to be, but I don't know. The players do not seem behind him, and that's always going to be a problem.
Let's look at what happened in this game. I mean, I know Wes Morgan did score, but like defensively, he can't cut it anymore.
No, he can't.
So what is Claude Puel supposed to do? Make him run faster to track back at
but
on the final
goal? We've seen this
goal?
All like, season away at Bournemouth, how bad he was, where he was sent off. I mean, I guess it's the manager's job to have addressed that in the summer. And he, it's not like he didn't buy centre back. He brought in Johnny Evans, mm-hmm. who I thought, again, that game at Goodison sticks out where he had a very good performance. I don't know. you don't want to say this about Leicester, but where you're at right now with Puel, I don't think there's someone that's going to come in and make it better.
They're ninth right now in the table.
Yeah.
Where would you have thought? Now, if you want to say, okay, fine.
Between like, 7 and 9.
Watford and Wolves are both ahead of Leicester right now. If you're a Leicester City supporter, you could look at that and say, come on, we should be doing better than them. But like, it's a fireable offense to be ninth instead of seventh. I don't know. I think that the board were right to keep him around for at least a little bit longer.
But don't forget the role that senior players at Leicester have had before in the removal of managers.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so that could be an issue.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Liverpool edging Crystal Palace 4-3 as well, thanks to goals from their big three. City also won, so the gap for Liverpool remains the same. I mean, let's take your temperature here, JJ. How are you feeling in the heat of this title race?
Well, let me just give you the heat of that game. I wasn't feeling well. I thought Liverpool were poor. They started okay, but Roy Hodgson had his tactics worked out perfectly. And on the break, Crystal Palace were excellent. Zaha gave Milner just a really, really tough day. Which, look, Milner is a 30-something midfielder being plugged in to replace your injured right back. So it was never a perfect fit. The midfield, Keita was poor. They still don't have that midfield three sorted out. Look, they went 4-2 up. I think in the end they deserve to win. My temperature is, I feel good, but there's some areas I'm worried about. And it's injuries. The second centre half position, we want Gomez back as quick as possible. Milner, oof, you worry about that. Again, I'm not sure about the way he configures that midfield. I'm a little bit nervous, but I'm going to be all the way to the end of the season.
Of course you are, and you should be. By the way, this is a little bit off topic, but while you mentioned James Milner, so he was sent off.
Yes.
And he was sent off by John Moss.
Right.
Did you know, and I'm looking at the photo right now, that 20 years ago, John Moss was James Milner's phys ed teacher in primary school?
No way.
I'm looking at the picture right now, and it's been confirmed by the Premier League that the photo is genuine. I'm reading the article.
Nuts.
PE teachers often get credit for kickstarting the careers of sporting stars, but James Milner might not be singing the praises of his ex-tutor. The Liverpool player was sent off against Crystal Palace by referee John Moss, who was Milner's PE teacher at Westbrook Lane Primary School in Leeds. The midfielder, 33, was dismissed late on after picking up a second yellow card for a foul on Wilfried Zaha.
I did not see that.
It's amazing.
But it's been confirmed. That's crazy.
I'm looking at the photo here, and I'm almost having a hard time picking out James Milner. Like, we always talk about boring James Milner. He just kind of looks like a combination of every kid in this photo. It's hard to tell.
That's not really shocking.
Right. He's just like the wallpaper. Yeah, isn't that John Moss, though? Wow, look at him 20 years ago. This is unbelievable.
You forget how long Milner's in the game, don't you?
Yeah. Well, because he started so... I mean, it feels like him and... Like, you ever play the same as game? Like, if I were to say a player's name, what are you doing over here? How am I supposed to continue on with the show? What are you doing?
Sorry, my iPad was about to die.
It's always something.
I know,
sorry. If I were to say a player's name, who's the next player that... Like, don't even think about it. When I say James Milner, who's the next player you think of?
Jermaine Pennant for some reason.
No, the answer is Gareth Barry. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense, actually.
Yeah, I don't know why. It just is.
No, they came up... Well, I won't say they came up together, but Gareth Barry was at least... He was 20... Gareth Barry, he made his debut so early that he was 24 for, it seemed like, a decade. Gareth Barry's not, you know, he's that age.
Yeah.
Jermaine Pennant's another one because I remember when he was transferred to Arsenal. And then you thought, oh, Jermaine Pennant must be in his mid-30s now. And he was like 25. He's just been around the game so long.
Yeah, absolutely. JJ, we mentioned a little bit at the start of the show, Chelsea. It's time to talk about Chelsea. And we're going to do it. Mauricio Sarri made some unbelievable comments about his club after their 2-0 defeat to Arsenal. Here's some of what that sounded like.
Today I prefer to speak Italian because I want to send a message to my players and I want my message to be very clear. You gotta go and get
angry at all of my honesty. This defeat was due to our mentality. I try, but I don't do too well with apologies. We played against a team which mentally was far more determined than we were. Can someone call a referee? Because I just need one more shot. Have forgiveness. seems to me that as a group of players, they're not particularly aggressive from a mental point of view. They don't have that kind of ferocity in their mentality. And that's something which I think is down to the type of players they are, their characteristics. And it's something which is difficult to change because you have to try to influence their mentality, and it's something which could take quite a long time.
Through the Justin Bieber lyrics there from the Chelsea press officer, what is being said there is actually pretty shocking stuff from a manager.
It's shocking. I never realized Justin Bieber wrote such clunky lyrics to Sarri.
Yeah, it barely fits.
I never knew his song was about a former bank manager turned football manager.
It's unbelievable. I mean, quite frankly, like, we talk all the time, is it okay for managers to lambast their players publicly? Is that a tactic that doesn't work? I'm not someone who will go so far as to say it's a tactic that won't work. I do think if you have the right group of players, you can get them to respond to that sort of thing. But I don't think this is the right group of players. Like, this is now a team, with some exceptions, that has kind of been through a couple different managers. Mourinho to Conte to Sarri, all legends in their own right.
Yeah.
And like, it's the same thing for each one of them. So I think this is just like, this is just what you got.
Yeah, but when you hear a manager say these players are very difficult to motivate, that's your job. That's literally your job. But I know what you mean.
No, is it like some of it, I people say that all the time. I don't know, man. I really think that like, it's
these
also
it's
incumbent on you as a professional to also motivate yourself. The manager can set you up tactically. He can try to put you in the best positions to win. Sure, he can try. Like, motivation is certainly part of their job. But to me, that's on each individual player to find it within himself to be a professional. Getting paid a ton of money. Fans are paying a ton of money to support you.
I'm not sure I agree with that. But in any event, that's almost tangential to the point about Chelsea. What Sarri's saying about this team is, I think you need to break the whole thing up, because I'm not sure I have the time or the patience to get these players to do what I want to do.
It is weird, though, and when he says something like this, it kind of impugns everyone, but like, I have a hard time. First of all, I thought he was like in love with Jorginho. Isn't that his guy?
Mm.
Yeah, and it's weird for me to hear this being said about N'Golo Kanté, who's now a World Cup champion and was maybe the best player on that team and on that Leicester City team.
Like, I cannot believe that N'Golo Kanté, who you could literally put in, like I talked about Milner playing right back, you can play N'Golo Kanté anywhere in the field and he'll do a job for you.
Yeah.
I can't believe
he's talking about him.
And Jorginho was like basically brought in to play Sarri ball. Like, he is the most important cog in what Sarri's trying to do.
Yeah, these comments were pretty jarring, and that's why we wanted to do this.
Go, 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 Charlie, come in the club.
That's right, JJ, we're going in the club with Chelsea. Dan Dormer, one of the hosts of the London is Blue podcast. We're excited to speak with him. Like we talked about before at the top of this show, we like going to other podcasts, other clubs, and doing a deep dive with a fan that knows the ins and outs. And we do that right now for a club that has been under a bit of a microscope lately that we've been talking about. That is Chelsea, and it's Dan Dormer from the London is Blue podcast on Caught Offside right now. Dan, what's up, man? How are you?
I'm doing great, guys. You know, I don't know necessarily if we're under a microscope as much as we're just a kind of lifetime level research project for someone. It's going to be someone's thesis somewhere in some kind of period of time, always.
Well,
there's something to always dissect with Chelsea.
I look forward to reading that thesis someday. Now, we wanted to go a little deeper on Chelsea after we heard that quote from Maurizio Sarri that we played before. When you hear Sarri say that, do you agree with your manager?
I think it's been proven over Mourinho 2.0 and Antonio Conte and now Mauricio Sarri that it can't all just be down to the manager, right? And I think Mauricio Sarri does have to look at himself pretty hard in the mirror to understand where he has some opportunities. You know, he's been willing to change tactics in some but not all the games. You know, the game we played against Manchester City was much different than the game we lost against Arsenal here just in the past weekend. And he was willing to flex a little bit tactically there. So there's maybe some opportunity for him to own some of that. But I think there is a a long-term issue of players continuing to control the locker room and having the ear of Roman Abramovich or Marina, who's kind of the de facto runner of the club from a day-to-day standpoint. And yeah, there are, I think, players on this side that do have to also look in the mirror and understand what their level of contribution is and if they're going to fight in the same way that, you know, the Lampard, the Essien, the Drogba, the Balak, the Petrček, the John Terrys of the world, because that steel, that might, that desire to fight into the last breath is just something that really this side is not, I think, has no identity even close to that.
Dan, I can't remember who it was on your last London is Blue podcast who said the following in the wake of the Arsenal defeat. It's too easy for Chelsea players to not try to coast because there isn't enough competition. Is that a view that you feel is widespread amongst Blues fans?
Yeah, I think when you look at the fact that the competition between players, if you know, you go look at Manchester City, for example, you know, great, you know, individual team to look at. When you have, you know, you can look at Sané, you can look at Sterling, you can look at, you know, Riyad Mahrez. You know, they have multiple players in each position that you could say could be starting for another Premier League side. And so they have crafted or are putting together, you know, my theory of two starting 11s. Like anyone that's going to compete across all four competitions in the Premier League, Champions League, or this case for us, at least this year, Europa League, the League Cup and the FA Cup needs as close to two starting 11s as possible. And we are nowhere near that capacity when we have, you know, Eden Hazard as the de facto center forward with Giroud behind him, Willian and Pedro as the 30-plus wingers on both sides with Callum Hudson-Odoi as then the deputy, and then Ruben Loftus-Cheek has been deployed in that functionality as well. We have Victor Moses and Danny Drinkwater collecting wonderful paychecks to provide Instagram likes to their fellow players. And it really is just, it reeks of poor squad management and an overarching understanding of what the true identity of the type of football Chelsea want to play and how they want the club to be run. And I think that's where we look at, you know, Arsenal obviously has just let go of, you know, their kind of, you know, de facto, you know, head of recruitment who could be a sporting director for other clubs. We're missing that type of figure since Michael Omanalo left to provide some level of structure or oversight to how the squad is going to be assembled, the type of players that we're going to go out and buy. And there just doesn't seem to be a level of continuity from window to window and even from manager to manager where we're willing to just overhaul sides, buy three or four new players, sell some others to make headway and, you know, align for, you know, a 1 to 2 year to 3 year window, try to win as many trophies as we can and then blow it up and rebuild again. And that's just not sustainable when other sides like Manchester City, like we're seeing now with Liverpool, are putting together foundational building blocks. You know, we can't just blow it up and then rebuild every couple of years when other teams are now building what I would say are very long-term projects for sustained success.
Dan Dormer from the London is Blue podcast joining us here on Caught Offside. Dan, you mentioned Eden Hazard, and he's such a tremendous talent. We all know that, and he's been a part of so many great Chelsea moments over the years. But I saw a quote from him today, and I don't know. I mean, it caused me to pretty much stop what I was doing. This is what he said. In my career, I have frustrated all my coaches, and with Sarri, once again, I frustrate him. I frustrated Mourinho. They think that I need to mark more, do more of this and more of that, and the next coach that I have, I'll frustrate him as well. Like I said, he's so great as a player, but when you hear something like that, I mean, he doesn't explicitly come out and say that his coaches are questioning his work rate, but that's kind of what I read from that. I mean, when you see that, like, do you just want to shake him and be like, dude, wake up, like, you're a great player, just do what your coaches are asking?
Well, we know that his defensive game has never been a hallmark, even under Mourinho, and a couple of times when he's had to go back and provide the, you know, maybe the goal-saving challenge to someone, his level of tactical grace in that scenario is quite questionable. So I think when we look at the legend of Eden Hazard at Chelsea, it is going to be a little bit of, you know, where does he want to rank from an all-time perspective? And, you know, obviously the rumors tend to circulate around, does he end up going to Real Madrid, and is an offer going to populate at some point here? And, you know, my gut feeling is that with the way that he tends to score and in the bunches he tends to do it, if they're looking to replace someone like Ronaldo, that he's not the right target for Real Madrid. I think he's able and capable of doing great work at Chelsea still. I think as long as we equip an appropriate center forward there and let him get back to what he does best, which is floating in from the outside, coming in as a winger, providing the assists, the run, the take on. Because right now he's getting marked by three center backs at a time, and he really just doesn't have the ability to do kind of that take on experience when he's getting kind of tactically fouled out of games. And, you know, I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I probably would be as fed up and as frustrated as him if I went through a season where, you know, because there are some players, I'm not going to name names, who go to ground extremely easily. And we see plenty of great gifts about how quickly their diving abilities are, you know, could get them in an Olympic competition.
Let's name names. Name names, Dan. Dan, what are you, you know, you're not a, we haven't subpoenaed you before Congress. Name names.
You know, I mean, I really enjoyed the GIF with Salah and like the deer hunter thing where they're doing the shooting tactic and he falls to the ground.
Yeah, yeah.
The Harry Kane, where he looked like he was Luigi jumping off the
and Jamie
the top of a
Jamie
Mario building.
Jamie Vardy as well can go to ground, as we've seen in the last few weeks, quite a different way. He likes to go gadget long leg into a defender and then fall over.
Yeah, I mean, so I think that Hazard is frustrating because he is capable of brilliance and oftentimes the squad put around him to be successful is just a little below. I think it reminds me, and I'm a Patriots fan. I grew up in the Northeast. So, I mean, you can hate me for that as well. Being a Chelsea fan and a Patriots fan,
good Lord,
the success is wonderful. But in that capacity, you know, there have been times where Tom Brady hasn't been surrounded by the best and he still somehow figures out a way to win a game or win a match. And, you know, but there are also times where it is absolutely frustrating as a fan to watch a mediocre amount of players being put around them to be successful. And I think that's where, you know, at least my feeling is for Eden Hazard, is that he is capable of delivering at a higher level. He doesn't always have the best ability of sustaining it because he's also tending to carry the majority of the results for the team. If you take Eden Hazard out of this Chelsea side this season, we would be struggling. We would still be in the top 10, but it would definitely be a struggle.
Dan, it's been a pretty awful season off the field for fans, Chelsea fans too, with several high-profile racial incidents prompting the chairman to release a 700-word statement vowing not to rest until we have eliminated all forms of discrimination from our club. Are there times as a Chelsea fan where you just question your decision to commit to the club, considering the element it still has in its fan base?
Oh, I would say no. I will say that, you know, I went to my first away match as a Chelsea fan just a few weeks ago. It was the match at Crystal Palace, and the you know, Y word, which is, you know, a derogatory form of slander against, you know, Jewish individuals, was used at that match, and it's pretty sobering when you come to think of the fact that, you know, it's not something I've experienced at other sporting events, you know, within the U.S. And it's shocking to hear. And I think that's why, you know, ourselves on the Lonely Blue podcast and then a bunch of other Chelsea supporters groups like Chelsea in America, other Chelsea podcasts, the Chelsea Supporters Trust, which is a group of, you know, a fan-led coalition banded together for what we call Chelsea Together, which is a group that is solely focused on the removal of racial, gender, sexual orientation, religion, age, or disability discrimination. And, you know, it's been great to see the club actually, you know, tweeted out about it. Mauricio Sarri talked about it in the press conference leading up to Arsenal, about how there's 99% of Chelsea fans are really great. And there's a absolutely ridiculously vocal 1% minority that enjoy saying and thinking that they can say anything at these games without any repercussions. And I mean, the repercussions are not just going to be for individuals who are going to potentially, you know, go to jail in the UK for hate speech, but it affects the global entity of the club. And so if they want to see better football, you know, they should just be a better person because of that, because ultimately, you know, what sponsor is going to want to go near a club where there are supporters who are being questioned for, you know, levels of racial or religious intolerance? That's completely unacceptable. It is absolutely abhorrent. And I think the best thing that fans and supporters can do is continue to rise up and say that we're absolutely sick of it. It's disgusting to us. And if you hear it, obviously it can be tough in the moment to confront it, but there are things like the Kick It Out app. The club obviously would solicit that information to understand seat number and location. And you know what? I mean, it's not about narking on other people. It's about what type of environment do you want to create for others to enjoy this match? And it's not about saying, don't sing, you know, certain songs, don't have a little bit of a laugh. It's about saying that there are certain things that society has accepted that are not worthy of being made fun of or laughing at. And we just need to kind of curtail that in, you know, by all means sing about how, you know, Harry Kane flops, but don't sing about, you know, the other, you know, connotations that have a very negative piece to it.
And last one for me, obviously a lot of the talk with Chelsea this year has been kind of the struggles up front, whether it be Morata or Giroud or playing Hazard in a false nine. Gonzalo Higuain obviously has been linked to Chelsea. Is there a belief that he's enough to change their current trajectory?
I think any type of center forward that can come in and allow Eden Hazard to get back to doing what he was doing the first half of the season is going to be exceptional. And I think Higuain had struggled at Milan, even so much so as getting into an incident of tackling his manager, unfortunately, which may have been unintentional, but was quite funny to witness. I think that if it is a 6-month loan with an option to buy, there's not a better type of solution, especially as we look to move on from Rata. Find out, you know, obviously we're going to need to replace Giroud at some point here too. So there are a lot of talented young strikers out there. Timo Werner is going to be out of contract soon. You know, Luka Jovic, you know, if you wanted to get kind of frisky, get in there and, you know, pay Benfica and pay Frankfurt to get him out of his contract, that would be another option. So, I mean, the club is going to have to figure out what they want to do for the short term, which I think is going to be Higuain. And then what's the long-term solution? And if that's Higuain becomes then a number two to a new, you know, first place striker, maybe a Mario Icardi who looks unsettled at, you know, Inter Milan, it's going to be the area of the squad to invest in heavily. And that's where the promotion of young talent like a Callum Hudson-Odoi, a Ruben Loftus-Cheek, maybe a Reece James into a right back position will give Chelsea the ability to not have to spend heavily on squad positions and to kind of allow some of the depth to build from within, and then can go splash the cash on the one or two marquee signings that are going to make a difference like we did with Kepa this past window.
Well, good stuff, man. The podcast is the London is Blue podcast. So for all of our Chelsea listeners out there who have been looking for a podcast, give it a shot.
And Dan also writes for We Ain't Got No History. Isn't that right, Dan?
That is correct. Yeah, two great places to find Chelsea information, London's Blue podcast and We Ain't Got No History. Thanks, guys.
Good stuff, man. Take care.
All right, bye.
Our thanks to Dan Dormer.
Nice guy.
Yeah, you did a deep dive there. You actually you did the work and you were listening to London is Blue podcast.
I listened to two episodes.
Nice.
Which is tough.
That's what this is. Why? Oh. Well, because you despise the team.
No, I mean, you're never going to, as a Liverpool fan, willfully look out Chelsea podcast to listen to. But right. Those guys do a good job and they're nice fellas.
Yeah. And, so to all of our Chelsea supporters out there who listen to this podcast, we suggest you check out that one.
But keep listening to this one.
Yeah, well, there's room for a many, Jay.
No, there isn't.
Oh, I forgot.
And they will know us by the trail of dead.
Oh. lots of news and notes, actually, to talk about before we get out to different things.
Leave that in. Before we get out to different
things. Yeah, that's a thing people do. They do different things after they leave wherever they were. Tim Howard, JJ, an American legend, one of the great goalkeepers in the history of this country.
He's done the pre-retirement announcement. Do you like that?
Yeah.
That's fine?
Yeah. I got no problem with it.
I thought he had retired when he went to Colorado.
What is that, some kind of joke?
They've been bad. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, they were bad.
I'm sorry for him. He only really got one good season out of them. That first one was pretty decent. Remember they got to the playoffs?
Yeah. But yeah, last year they were bottom, I believe. But that's not even really what this is about. You are right to ask, though, if people, what people think of like the before the year retirement question. Look, maybe you could look at it and say that there's some ego involved when a guy does do that.
Oh, there is.
But I do think that like Tim Howard is probably aware of how fans feel about him. He's beloved by American soccer fans. So I do think that it is kind of like tipping the fans off a little bit to say, look, you know, if you do want to see me play again, this is your last chance. And I do think there's a lot of American fans that appreciate that.
Look, he's been a fantastic goalkeeper for his country. Very, very good club goalkeeper in England. And if he wants to give himself a bit of a send-off, that's what's going to happen. He said the time for sentiment is later in the tweet.
Yeah,
that's
I'm greatly looking forward to kicking off the 2019 MLS season, as it will be my last, in all caps. There will be plenty of time for sentiment later. For now, I'm going to enjoy every minute, and as I've always done, compete hard and help lead the Rapids with the sole purpose of winning. And he has done his fair share of winning. He won an FA Cup and a League Cup with United. Won two Gold Cups with the U.S. He's the winningest goalkeeper in U.S. men's national team history, starting goalkeeper in three World Cups, and of course, JJ holds the record for the most saves in a World Cup match when he had 16 saves against Belgium, which you and David Preece love to mock, which is,
we don't
quite
mock.
Frankly, it's hurtful. I don't understand the vitriol. Also, 399 EPL appearances, seventh most all-time by a goalkeeper.
No, he had a very good career in England, there's no question.
Scored a goal, too, as we almost now prophetically played last week, like for no reason.
We knew.
You feel like we felt it in our bones. I'm kind of curious now, and because this announcement only really just came down, I haven't had a chance to dive into it, but I would be curious to kind of like, in my mind, and even statistically, stack him up with Friedel and Keller. I feel like those three, they're in the same era. They've all had tremendous careers. They were all successful in Europe. Like, yeah. I do wonder who people would say is, you know, gold, silver, bronze in that.
That's a tough one.
Yeah.
I think probably, and they're the two recent ones to have retired and to announce their retirement, I would say Friedel.
Howard
Friedel competing for number one, in my view.
I think so, too. The fact that Howard was the American keeper at three World Cups, I think
it's got to count,
has some kind of tiebreaker value for me.
Yeah.
I know Friedel was otherworldly for the U.S. in 2002.
I think the best part of Friedel's career, which often happens to goalkeepers, did come later than Howard's. A little bit later than Howard's.
Yeah, that could be.
Those days with Blackburn were his best days.
Yeah. Another American player, JJ, Jozy Altidore, is he entering his final season with Toronto FC? Now, I might not have thought that, but here's a quote from him from the Max and Herc podcast where he said, "It's been a terrific time, but at the end of the day, it's a business." He goes on to say, "When I say it's bittersweet, it's because I've spent 4 years there. I kind of have roots put down there. My family enjoys it. It's bittersweet in the sense that you have to leave that and go to something new, but that's the business."
Well, that sounds fairly certain. The next quote I plucked from the Max and Herc podcast was, "I'm excited for what's to come and I've given everything to Toronto FC. I think it was mission complete in terms of going there and winning, which we set out to do. So I look forward to the next challenge. I'm not going to pause. There's no hard feelings." That seems like he wants out. Not just that there's going to be a parting, but that he'd like to go somewhere else. And at 29, I wouldn't blame him.
If he was heading where next?
I don't know.
What are you implying, a return trip to Europe?
I mean, if he's going to go, he needs to go now. I don't think that'll be the case, though, but somewhere else. I think he might want to go somewhere else.
That line about him, mission complete.
Yeah.
They won a title.
Well, he was brought in
to do that specifically, yeah. It was a glorious
season. Yeah.
But I do wonder, coming off the season that Toronto are coming off of, putting that quote in front of a fan right now, I don't know, maybe they would agree with that. It just felt like this season was just such a disappointment. I don't know if maybe Toronto FC fans expected a little bit more prolonged, more of a prolonged stay at the top of the league than that.
When Alexi Lalas was talking about dynasties and the like.
But he wasn't alone.
No, there was a lot of people talking
about that. I think people thought that, you know, they could go on and win a CONCACAF Champions League, or they could go on and repeat in MLS. And for the way that it went, I don't know. Look, ultimately, he's right. It was mission complete. Toronto FC were a disaster of a club for years. And then this renaissance, they got to a final. They went on and won it the next year. They set a points record at the time. So, yes, I don't mean to like parse through his words and pluck out my own meaning. He's right. He did what they set out to do. I don't know. I feel like Toronto could, if he wanted to stay there long term and they could keep this core together, like they could go on and continue being a great club.
It might be a lifestyle change he wants as well.
Maybe.
Might be warm weather or something like that.
Yeah. JJ, you know what we got? We got one of these.
Lampard! Alan Gerard, we're keeping an eye on you.
Boy, he really does scream that at you, doesn't he?
Oh, God. He sounds like a London detective who's just broke a case.
This Lampard Gerard watch is focused more on the Lampard side of things, isn't it, JJ?
Frank has signed Ashley Cole.
Wow.
His buddy, who is actually a few years younger than Frank, at 38, for Derby County. He will join the championship team. He's already met up with them. He said it will be the last. He did an interview early on. He said it will be the last time I will be calling him Frank. I will be calling him Gaffer from now on.
Yeah, I don't know. When I saw it, it felt weird for a couple reasons. One, he's just at an age where I just like wouldn't have thought that this is that he'd be really on anyone's radar.
He will
in
be
anymore.
He will be the oldest player, should he play, which we expect he will. He will be the oldest player to feature in the championship this season.
Ugh. It was particularly weird for me because do you remember what he was saying about MLS before he went there? That it was
slagging it off.
Yeah, that it's just like this is a retirement community. But he came to MLS and he played at a high level. Even last year, I thought he was still very good for the Galaxy. He took it seriously, and for whatever that was worth, it left some kind of impression, whether that be on Lampard or somebody at Derby, who thought, you know what, he's still good enough. Like, I can watch what he's doing in MLS, and I can see him doing a job here in the championship.
I think he was really good going forward for the Galaxy. Defensively, I don't think he got any better because he doesn't have that recovery speed anymore. So it's going to be interesting. Plus, it's not like when he announced he was finishing with the Galaxy that he took up a spot. Maybe he wanted some rest, but there was quite a few months before this happened. So you wonder how fit he is. Derby have had Andre Wisdom, 25, Scott Malone play at left back. So it'll be interesting to see if Cole can kind of usurp them and command a starting place.
Yeah, and then one other signing that was very interesting to me was seeing Barcelona sign Kevin Prince Boateng. Wow.
Just from Sassuolo,
yeah,
out of nowhere. Did not see it coming. But I didn't really see them signing Arturo Vidal, and that happened. Just an odd kind of signing. Just like we said, we didn't say last week, I don't think we got a chance to comment on it, but Ryan Babel to Fulham seemed weird to me,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, very.
Yeah, I maybe there are statisticians who say, this guy can come in, he's still capable at 31 years of age of giving something to this Barcelona side, but it just seems like a sudden jump upwards, you know? A really rapid jump. It's like when...
Well, look, he's played at high level.
No, he has. I know, but it's still... We don't look at Barcelona that way. Maybe we have to start thinking of them as a different club now since the kind of La Masia guys have been broken up. And
yeah, maybe. And then I even saw today another... Like, if we're talking about unusual signings, did you see who Middlesbrough signed?
Yes, I
did. John Obi Mikel.
Again, a highly rated player,
yeah,
but a weird kind of trajectory.
Yeah.
But again, that used to, I feel like that was a more common thing years ago. Remember when Nicolas Anelka signed for Chelsea from Bolton?
Right.
Those kind of, you know, you always think in your mind, if you drop below a certain level of club, you're not getting back to the top.
Well, Bolton were still in the Premier League.
I know, but it was a circuitous route to get there. Don't forget.
No, I mean, Riyad Mahrez went from Leicester to Manchester City. Like, that stuff still
No,
goes
but
on.
That was an upward trajectory. That was Le Havre, Leicester City, Manchester City.
Right.
Nicolas Anelka was Arsenal, Real Madrid, and then this kind of odyssey before he found his way to Chelsea in the Champions League. That's all I'm saying. Oh, I've got one more note to make. From France, from FC Nantes, who are obviously going through the terrible issues we talked about earlier in the pod. Vahid Halilhodžić, the manager, this was tweeted out. His quote was tweeted out from the Nantes account about Matt Miazga. This was quite something. This is the translation. The blackmail I was talking about yesterday was about Matt Miazga. He assured me that he had a sore back. After exams, however, there was no problem. He just wanted to leave the club. This morning, Matt Miazga was in England, in Chelsea. He didn't warn anyone. These things bother me, but it has to be done with, even if it disappointed me a lot. So Miazga, who has hardly played since October, looking to force his way out. But for the club to, as we talked about, dirty laundry in public.
Yeah.
I don't, that's just not, it doesn't reflect well on either the club or Matt Miazga, to be honest.
No, maybe more so Miazga.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's unfortunate because things were really going well for him. He was playing well in the Eredivisie, and he was, you know, back in the U.S. men's national team.
We thought
picture,
this might be a good move because he'd definitely start.
Yeah.
But he went away for those friendlies in October with the U.S., and he pretty much hasn't kicked a ball with nonsense.
Yeah. Let's see. Before we get out, we do have a really quick what to watch for because the second leg of that takes place on Wednesday and Thursday. Wednesday, 2:45, Burton Albion and Manchester City. I guess insert whatever corny joke here about, you know, a 9-0 deficit overcoming, you know, everything at stake, the drama of the cup, so on and so forth. And then Thursday, 2:45, Chelsea and Spurs as it goes back to Stamford Bridge with Tottenham holding that 1-0 aggregate lead. We think they'll have Lucas Moura back. That's not definite. God, do they need it. With Kane, Dele, we went through all that earlier. Should be very interesting. Chelsea maybe felt a little bit hard done to have lost that first leg. I still think that everything was legit and that the call and the VAR all worked the way that it was supposed to, but it was very close. If Maurizio Sarri, I guess we'll find out about this Chelsea team because now they're thrown right into the fire in a big match, in a semifinal against a rival. If Sarri's words got through to them, then I would expect Chelsea to go out and beat a Tottenham side that are a little bit wounded right now. If they did not, Spurs go through. Should be very interesting.
I would say to anybody who's a Chelsea fan to read Gab Marcotti on Chelsea, Kante and Jorginho, that whole positional thing, and Sarri on ESPN FC. It's really, really good.
Yeah. And then Copa del Rey quarterfinals, first legs, a few of the marquee ones. Wednesday, 3:30. This is a great quarterfinal matchup with the way things have been going this season. Sevilla and Barcelona.
Although Sevilla lost at the weekend to Real Madrid, mm-hmm. that is still a really tasty tie.
Yeah. Thursday at 1:30, Espanyol and Real Betis. And that same day at 3:30, Real Madrid and Girona. We will be back on Thursday to recap some of those matches and to look ahead to an FA Cup weekend.
And to do a rap battle because it's being demanded.
I wanted to talk to you about
that. Oh, boy.
Well, no. I'm not dodging it, but I do think that we need to reformat it.
How do you mean?
Well, because, like, a rap battle is typically exactly that. You and I kind of like have some
go
sort
back
of,
and forth.
Yeah, some kind of topic that we'll battle over rather than just like, hey, I'm going to rap to you now about Alexi Lalas. That doesn't make sense. So I think what I was thinking, you can, if you want to veto it, that's fine. I was thinking in the build up to the next Caught Offside Cup, we rap battle about that.
All right, okay.
You prefer that? Because like, so, then we can actually like take shots at one another. What am I going to say to you? What is it that your topic was that you picked?
It was Brendan. You picked Brendan Rodgers
right.
for me, and I was struggling to get
that's
something
like,
to rhyme with tremendous character.
That's just like Lin-Manuel Miranda rapping about Hamilton. You know, like that's not really a battle with anyone. He's just like...
Well, I was going to say that the listeners could vote for whoever's was best.
Well, they could still do that, but I think we need to have something that we can like trash talk each other over.
All right, okay.
You okay with that?
Yeah, that's fine. I'll
oh, wow.
Go,
I thought this was going to be a real fight.
I just got go straight at your sensitivities, the fact that you are, you know, in therapy, all those things.
I'm not, but I have no problem with people that are.
No, neither do I, but I will pick away at your insecurities.
Well, there are many to choose from. Well, hey, I enjoyed this. Our thanks to Dan Dormer from the London is Blue podcast as we went in the club with him. We will be back on Thursday. Hey, to you I say...
Take you later, fun boy.
See ya.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.